So now we try to get the projector working. So before we start reading the suttas, so maybe I can give you some background story about this sutta. And basically, this sutta is come from that one of the Brahmins that he's judging the Buddha. He was thinking the Buddha because of Buddha eating delicious food, and so he's looking down of the Buddha, thinking that, you know, his practice is not as good as me because I am the Brahmin, I eat simple food. And because he saw Buddhas eating delicious food, because as an alms mendicant, we eat whatever is being offered. So, and because of that, they say, oh, because that's why we can't judge someone, isn't it, from outside, just because of this, because of the Buddha's eating delicious food, and he comparing himself that I'm purer, I'm better, my practice is better because I eat simple food. So, and actually, it's, the practice is not like what you eat that purify your mind, isn't it? Like, nowadays, like, people keep arguing, you know, whether you've been vegetarian or non-vegetarian. I mean, it's fine. If you want to be vegetarian, it's all fine. It's okay. If you think that it's healthier, taking vegetarian food, fine. But not thinking that being vegetarian will help you to purify your mind. Then, we don't have to practice, isn't it? Just take vegetarian food and we got enlightened, we got purified. So it's easy, isn't it? It's not. So people are so concerned about what's going into their mouth. But never think of what's coming out from their mouth, isn't it? Sometimes people can be so, you know, so nasty to others, speak horrible things, you know, and so unkind and said things that is really very hurtful, very harmful and really hurting others. And that is only concern what's going into the mouth. Thinking that, oh, I eat vegetarian food, I'm purer. Those are non-vegetarian, they are terrible, they are not pure. So that is this is a wrong view. It's wrong view. This is not how we purify the mind. So this sutta is basically the Buddha talk about how we purify our mind. It's not because of we do some ceremony, perform some rites and ritual. That means this is how we purify our mind. Also the mention also that, no, in India, they go into the Ganges River to bathe, then to wash away all their defilements. They believe that this is how they purify. So it's not by going into the river, going to the Ganges River, and you bathe there, then your mind be purified. Then this is really wrong view. So basically, because of this is the background story, because of that, the Buddha gives this teaching, because of the Brahmin have this misperception that he thinks that the Buddha is not enlightened, the Buddha is practice is no good, and he's better than the Buddha because he eats simple food. The Buddhas eat delicious food, and we should eat simple food. So because we can't judge a person from outside, isn't it? So he's been judgmental about the Buddha, and also have these wrong views about how to purify the mind, you know. Purifying the mind is not through what you eat. It's through your practice. So that's why basically this is the background story, the gist of the suttas. And so, we need Nicholas, huh? So, I think this technology very good when this is working, isn't it? Are you getting this working? And also, this sutras also mention about that this because come from our impurity, so the minds cannot take in, you know, cannot be delight in the Dhamma. Like, for example, sometimes people come to ask me, shall I meditate first or shall I read Dhamma's book, the suttas? So I say, if you can meditate, you meditate. Because when you don't have the clarity, you don't have the purity, your mind is not receptive. it somehow is being blocked off, isn't it? And even sometimes like people don't take delights in the teaching, because sometimes if we feel that I'm really depressed, really put me off when the Buddha talk about Four Noble Truths. But like for me, I'm okay. Like for me, I think that is good that you have to understand your suffering. That's why you do suffer. But some people straight away have the perception that, oh, terrible. As if that you have to understand suffering, the Four Noble Truths, and talk about suffering, then I have to suffer. It's just like you have that, the mind is not ready, and then your mind is really confused, you know, you're not receptive. That's why when you have more clarity, and actually you take delights in the meaning, and you will really inspire, this is what it means. And especially sometimes really through our practice, you know, sometimes we think that we understand, and then after over a period of time we practice, and then we read again the sutta, say, this is what it really means, and then we feel really inspired, isn't it? We feel uplifted. It gives us so much joy and happiness. So the Buddha said, when you have this clearness, and it lead to it's a cause and effect, and leads to rapture, piti sukha, and then the body become tranquil, and your body tranquil, you have the pleasure of the tranquility, then your mind becomes still. So if your mind is not pure, if your mind is defiled, so you are not receptive, you will not inspire, you will not delight in the Dhamma. So they say, first of all, you can only take in, you know, delight in the Dhamma. And then it's just like the simile of the cloth. So if the cloth is stained, it won't take the dye. It's like our mind, we won't take in the Dhamma, we won't take in the teaching. We are not receptive because the mind is being defiled. So now we can start. Okay? Is it ready? Okay, be ready. So basically, I'm just talking about the gist of the suttas, these suttas. And it's a simple suttas, but I think it's really good sometimes. Like, it's good that sometimes we go back to the more simple suttas and simple teaching. And sometimes the simple teaching is more profound, isn't it? And people like to, I know sometimes people think that, you know, if it's things that they don't understand the meaning, they think that it's profound. So something simple, they think that it's not profound. They think that, you know, something that, like the Buddha said, you know, like you make sure you teach, you make sure that people understand, make sure that it's clear. And not that say something that sounds good but mean nothing. It's just that the Buddhists give the example of, like, you know, you keep telling people, how wonderful this person, how good this person, and you start to ask, who is this person? What is this person name? Don't know. Where is it coming from? Okay. Vacchupama Sutta, Sutta 7, the simile of the cloth. Yes. Don't know, but sound good, isn't it? And you think that it's so profound because we don't understand. It's just like Ajahn Brahm said, if someone truly understands the Dhamma, you can explain your Dhamma to anyone on their level and in that the person language. Okay, good. Okay, thank you, Nicholas. Thank you. Okay. Okay, now we start the sutta. So it's the sutta seven, Vacchupama Sutta, the simile of the cloth. So, thus have I heard. On one occasion, the Blessed One was living at Savatthi in Jetagrove's Anathapindika's park. There he addressed the bhikkhus thus. Bhikkhus, Venerable Sir, they replied. The Blessed One said this, bhikkhus, suppose a cloth were defiled and stained, and a dyer dip it in some dye or other, whether blue or yellow, red or pink, it will look poorly dyed and impure in color. What is that? because of the impurity of the cloth, so too, when the mind is defiled, an unhappy destination may be expected. You see this? Buddha said, unhappy destination may be expected. So our level of happiness actually depends on the purity of our mind. The purer we are, the happier we are. So you look at children, they're naturally happy, isn't it? Because they come from the purity. So that's why as we purify our mind, the more we let go, the more we develop our purity, that if naturally we're happier and happier. So it's a gradual training. So they say it's our happiness is also the level of happiness also depends on the purity of our mind. So that's why the Buddha said, you see, an unhappy destination may be expected if your mind is defiled. So bhikkhus, suppose a cloth were pure and bright, and the dyer dip it in some dye or other, whether blue, yellow, or red or pink. It would look well dyed and pure in color. What is that? Because the purity of the cloth. So too, when the mind is undefiled, happy destination may be expected. I just mentioned before that when your mind is not pure, when we have your mind is defiled, then your mind is that confused and you're not receptive. Even you read that, you know, you sometimes you might get upset, you know. Some people said that I'm so depressed when I first listened to the teaching of Four Noble Truths, make me feel so depressed. And you don't have the openness and your mind, because you're closed, your mind like defiled. So you have that resentment. So what pickles are the imperfections that defile the mind? Covetousness, unrighteous, greed is an imperfection. Covetousness here is means that the sensual desires that we constantly, you know, looking for sensuous pleasure, the sensual desires, and unrighteous greed. As like righteous, what is unright? What is righteous greed? Like for example, if we greet someone, oh may everybody well, oh may Lynn Jackson happy, and yes, it's greed, but this is righteous greed. You know, something. So that is easy mean that is unrighteous greed. Okay, this. Greed is like actually that one thing you want more. You want more and more, and you have some pleasure. It's not enough. You want even more. This is where the greed comes from. It's something good that we want it more and more. This is how we become very greedy. We want more and more and more. Righteous greed is like sometimes it's not. It's some like righteous greed is like we. Let is a bit greedy, we want more, but actually we are not wanting it for ourselves, it's more for kindness. I'm just like feel happy, oh you know, may Lynn Jackson happy. May she, or may everybody be happy. Yeah, it's a bit, you know, you have that one thing, but that one thing is not come from unwholesome, is more from come from kindness and compassion. So that's why it's more come from, that's why they mention this is unrighteousness, like you're so greedy, you know, I want it more. So and I see other people have it, I should have that. I should have one of those. This person has that. I should have one of that. We go even to the expense of on the expense of others in order to get more of those that come from that is unrighteous greed. So it's an perfection that defiles the mind. Ill will, anger, ill will is a opposite of goodwill, kindness, loving kindness is goodwill. It's like, oh, may all beings be well and happy. May everybody, you know, free from suffering. Ill will is opposite. Sometimes we have ill will towards ourselves, even towards others. So we think that we don't deserve it. We are not good enough. We are terrible. We have this ill will, anger, revenge, contempt, domineering attitude, like to control others, like to be dominant over others, domineering attitude, envy, avarice, deceive, avarice, like more hoarding, you know. Deceive, fraud, obstinacy, presumptions, conceit, arrogant conceit. This is when Buddha talk about the conceit, it's not that we are better than others, we are the best, but actually it's also the three conceit. So most people think that conceit, you think of I'm good, I'm better. But actually the Buddha talk about the three conceit. I'm good, I'm better, I'm as good, I'm terrible, I'm worse. Even you think that we are terrible, we good for nothing, it's also conceit. That is the, actually it's come from how we identify the sense of self, who we are. We are better, we are good, or we are terrible, or we want to compete with others, I'm as good as you. And this is how we identify ourselves. This is come from the sense of self. This is a three conceit. Arrogant. Vanity. Vanity is like vain, you have pride that I'm still young, I'm so strong, I'm so good, I still look beautiful, that feels like so vain, it's a vain. And negligence is an imperfection that defiles the mind. So the Buddha just gives the example here. Doesn't mean that it's not put in here, then there's not the defilement. So any unwholesome qualities, negative qualities that leads you to unwholesome or negative emotions, that defilements. So any qualities that leads to a negative emotion, that says defilements, even though some of them is not listed here. So anything that causes you, leads you the pain, mental suffering, and there is a defilement. So like the Buddha said, whatever that is unwholesome, so the Buddha said about kusala and akusala. So wholesome, unwholesome, or skillful or unskillful. If anything that is being unskillful or unwholesome, that leads you to suffering. Anything that's been skillful, wholesome, that leads you to happiness, leads you to liberation, leads you to freedom. So that's why the Buddha never judges. He said, "Oh, this is the way to go." So if you've been unskillful, you're doing something unwholesome, that causes you suffering. This is the cause of your suffering because of this. This is this unwholesome qualities. So if you want to know whether what is this defilements, so anything that leads you to suffering, this is the defilement. So defilements will lead you to unhappy, you lead to unhappy destination, you're unhappy. If any wholesomes, and that when you have no defilements, so that leads you to happiness. Knowing that covetousness and unrighteous greed is an imperfection that defiles mind, a bhikkhu abandons it, knowing that ill will, anger, revenge, condemn, domineering attitude, envy, avarice, deceit, fraud, obstinacy, presumptions, conceit, arrogant, vanity, negligence is an imperfection that defiles the mind, because abandons it. So first of all, we have to know, isn't it? We have to recognize that. If we don't recognize that, how are we going to let go? How are we going to abandon that? It's just like yesterday we have one question asked, like how we let go of, how to let go? I said, letting go, first of all, you have to be able to recognize that, isn't it? To know that. Some people don't even know that they have, you know, that they react to that. They don't even know that this is defilements that causes the suffering. They don't even recognize that. What causes the suffering? So if you don't, that's why you have to have enough wisdom in order to be able to work on our defilements. That's why we have to start off, enough wisdom. So we have the wisdom power to work on our defilements. So if we don't have enough clarity, so the wisdom come from clarity. So that's why first of all, we have to develop our mindfulness, practice present moment awareness. Then we become more aware, mindful of our thoughts that arises, that we be able to recognize that this is something unwholesome, this is something leading us to suffering. And you have to be able to recognize that. Then only we be able to abandon. So when a bhikkhu has known that covetousness and unrighteous greed is an imperfection that defiles the mind, and he has abandoned it. When a bhikkhu has known that ill will, negligence is an imperfection that defiles the mind and has abandoned it, he acquires perfect confidence in the Buddhas. So he so possessed that through their own effort, the perfect confidence in the Buddha, thus the blessed one is accomplished, fully enlightened, perfect in true knowledge and conduct, sublime knower of the world, incomparable leaders of person to be tamed, teacher of gods and humans, enlightened, blessed. So, and then he acquires perfect confidence in the Dhamma. Thus, the Dhamma is well proclaimed by the Blessed One, visible here and now, immediately effective, inviting inspection onwards, leading to be experienced by the wise for themselves. He acquires perfect confidence in the Sangha. Thus, the Sangha of the Blessed One, the disciple, is practicing the good way, practicing the strict way, practicing the true way, practicing the proper way. That is the four pairs of person and the eight types of individuals. The Sangha of the Blessed One disciples is worthy of gifts, worthy of hospitality, worthy of offerings, worthy of reverential solutions, salutation, the unsurpassed field of merits for the world. So the Buddha mentioned these four pairs of person. Four pairs of person. What are the four pairs of person? The four pairs of the person is, the first pair is the stream winners. So the stream winners that's on the path to the stream winners, and the one already attained the stream winners. That is the first stage enlightenment. And the second pair is the one who was the once returner, that is the Sakakami. That is the one is on the path through the once returner. And then the third pair is the Anagami non-returner, and the one is on the path to the non-returner and the Arahatship. So the Arahan, so there's the person who on the path to the Arahatship. So this is there are four pairs, there's eight types. So four times two, four pairs, there is eight types of individuals. So when the Buddha said that you know, when we abandon that our defilements, when we are pure, we take delight in the teaching. So then this is how we started to get inspired, and then we have this unwavering confidence in the teaching, in the Buddha, in the Dhamma and the Sangha. So whenever the Buddha talk about, and we have that unwavering, like, complete confidence in the teaching, in the Buddha, in the Sangha, actually is referred to the stream winners, the Sotapanna, someone that's unshakable. The confidence is unshakable. And when the Buddha mentioned here that they have abandoned, you know, they have abandoned the defilements, it doesn't mean that permanently abandoned. It's just like temporarily abandoned. It's only when you are arahatship, you become an arahant, you fully enlightened, then you are permanently abandoned all the qualities. So if even you are the stream winners, you still have other defilements is there. But you know, that is for example, Sotapanna, they only abandon the three lower factors. So they still have ill will, but the ill will less. You know, they still have the sense of self. Like even Anangami, they still have a little bit of sense of self. The sense of self is still there. That's why it's not fully enlightened. So that's why it's temporarily, but it's not that permanently abandoned unless you are fully enlightened. So I remember there was a lady came to me. She was so guilty about herself. Like she told me, you know, what happened? I meditate and I attained jhana. I was in the jhana state. But I still interested when I see hot guys. I still like to look at, he said, I still like to look at hot guys. So I feel terrible. I'm so, I'm so, I'm so guilty. I said, you don't have to feel guilty. I said, you're not fully enlightened. It just gives you the a taste of that when your mind temporarily, without the five hindrances, you know, it's just temporarily suppressed. So when your mind absent of that defilements, then you have the experience of the jhana, you experience the stillness of the mind. It's not that you're permanently abandoned. So you're not. So I told her that, you know, it's not an attainment. Even you experience jhana, is not yet, it's not an attainment, but that is essential. So it's not the end of the goal. Like, you know, like for example, like virtue, sila. So it's essential. That is a foundation for a peaceful mind. So a peaceful mind is not the end of the goal. So the peaceful mind is a foundation for wisdom. So I said, it's not yet. So I said, you don't have to feel, oh, now I feel better. You know, she feels so guilty. She thinks that's terrible. Why? You know, she thinks that it's an attainment. I already attained jhana. How come I still interested in looking, you know, interested in looking when I see hot guys, I still have to look, I can't stop myself looking at them, you know, I'm still interested in them. I said, no. I said, it's just that give her a glimpse of how is it light when the absence of the defilements, when your mind free of defilements, this is how is it light. But it's not that you have permanently abandoned. So it's just temporarily abandoned, temporary, but it's still there. So it's little by little, stages. So that's like, then you come to paragraph 8. When he has given up, expelled, released, abandoned, and relinquished the imperfections of the mind in part, he considered thus, I'm possessed of perfect confidence in the Buddha, and he gains inspiration in the meaning, gains inspiration in the Dharma. He gains gladness connected with the Dharma. When he is glad, rapture is born in him. And in one who is rapturous, the body becomes tranquil. One whose body is tranquil feels pleasure. In one who feels pleasure, the mind becomes concentrated. That concentrated is not like concentrate, like when we talk about, because the translation said that concentrated, it seems like using willpower, try to focus, concentrate. But actually it's more like still, like a jump run. Even I myself prefer also to use the word still, because the mind becomes still. It's not moving. So become completely still. Concentrate is more like using willpower. You try to make the mind to focus. So it's concentrate. Sometimes people like those sportmen that concentrate, you know, when they're in the competition. So it's not concentrate. So it's become, the mind becomes still. So this, you can see this is the sequence of the cause and effect. So when you start to delight, when your mind, when you free of the defilements, when your mind is pure, when you have the purity, you take delights in the teaching and you give inspiration. You feel so inspired or so happy. When we feel inspired, so we feel we have the gladness. When we have the gladness, we feel we have the rapture, you know, pity. You know, sometimes even some people, when they're so happy, they're in tears. That is the pity. So the kind of the tears of happiness. So when you have the pity, when you have the rapture, so mind become, your body becomes tranquil. So when the body becomes tranquil, the body is tranquil, you feel pleasure. The pleasure is not the pleasure of the body. Actually, the pleasure of the tranquility is not the pleasure of the body. So when you have the tranquilities of the body, that you can sit long time because you don't have aches and pains. And because the mind is so tranquil that you don't feel aches and you don't feel aches and pains, and you can sit for a long, long time. And then you feel the pleasure. Then when the mind becomes, feel pleasure, the mind becomes still. So that's why the stillness, only the happy mind can do that. The happiness, when we are happy, the mind becomes still. When we are happy, we are content, isn't it? Why people being restless? Because they're not happy. They're not happy, they're restless because they want something else. Not content with with whatever they experience right now, they're not contented. In this, they are not content. That's why you're still looking for things. You feel not. That's why the mind becomes restless. When your mind becomes restless, you still wanting something else. Your mind will not be still, isn't it? Your mind still keep moving. So he considered this. I'm possessed of perfect confidence in the Dhamma. And he gained inspiration in the meaning, gained inspiration in the Dhamma, gains gladness connected with the Dhamma. He is glad, the mind becomes concentrated. So he considered as a process of perfect confidence in the Sangha, and he gains inspiration of the meaning, gains inspiration in the Dhamma, gains gladness connected with the Dhamma. When he is glad, the mind becomes concentrated. Become still, not concerned. So he considered thus the imperfection of the mind have in part been given up, expelled, released, abandoned, relinquished by me. And he gains inspiration in the meaning, gains inspiration in the Dhamma, gains gladness connected with the Dhamma. When he is glad, rapture is born in him. In one who is rapturous, the body becomes tranquil. One whose body is tranquil feels pleasure. In one who feels pleasure, the mind becomes still. Bhikkhus, if a bhikkhus in such virtue, such a state of stillness or such wisdom, its arms with consisting choice, hues rise along with various sources, curries, even that will be no obstacles for him. So, eating delicious food will not stop us, will not be an obstacle for our practice. It's not the food to help us to purify our mind, it's the practice, it's not what we eat. So I remember in early days when I first came, because before that when I was in Thailand, and it's, everything is more, the practice is more austere, so normally we don't allow to ask for even, to us, like even honey is something luxurious for us. So when I come to Australia, oh, we have honey all the time. So to me, like, oh, I think it's so luxurious. So then I start to think that, how come I be contented? You know, everything here is not so luxurious. They have honey all the time in Thailand. You know, we are not allowed to even ask for, you know, even you have lucky, you have coffee, then you have the coffee, I remember Ajahn told me, they said that you don't ask for coffee. If you've been offered coffee, it's fine. If you've been offered tea, fine. If you have coffee, we have coffee. If you have tea, we have tea. If you have no coffee, we just don't have coffee. If we don't have tea, we just don't have tea. That's it. You know? I might come here because we are well supporters, everything abundant. Then I start to think that, oh, how come I practice contentment? You know, I have everything. It's difficult for me. Then I started to be, then I was thinking, Then I started to have doubt. I was thinking, oh, maybe I should go back to Thailand. Actually, I must say the first few months that I just keep bothering me, like the mind keep thinking, oh, maybe this is not the place for me to practice, you know. Then during master, so we have that assignment that said, you know, you look for all those qualities, everyone will study and come back. So happened that one of the qualities that I need to research and to gain much more understanding of the meaning of that qualities, that is contentment. I don't know why so happened that is by. I think it's just the karma, you know, just then. Then when I started to look at the books, and then there's the utmost, that's Venkatasava. He's the one who practiced all the Tutanga practice, you know, very austere. So he said he contents with inferior things and also superior things. So then certainly when I read that line, actually I got it. I realized that I've been discontent with good things. So, and actually, I've been thinking that I shouldn't have, like, good things, shouldn't have the nice things. It's not about the things, it's like how, like, and then I become like discontent with having good things. Then also, you're not content, isn't it? So then, because I don't understand the meaning of contentment, but then I got it. I said, this is really what is contentment means. Like, this is how we all have our perception, isn't it? What is contentment? Then I become like discontent. You know, oh, I have all these things too luxurious for me. Oh, you know, this is how we, again, this is come from the sense of self. We identify ourselves. And the mana say, I should be austere, I should be this, I should be that. That is again come from the identity of a self, the sense of self, the ego. And it's so subtle that you can't see, isn't it? And then you think that my practice is so good. I'm so austere. And again, it's come from big ego. You identify yourself, the identity who you are. We attach to the identity. I'm an austere. I'm so austere. So I'm supposed to, my practice is good. It's just like the Brahmin that he underestimate, you know, he judged the Buddha. He think the Buddha practice is no good because he eat delicious food. I eat simple food. So I was thinking that I'm austere, so my practice is good. So I'm very simple. So I shouldn't take honey. I shouldn't take this. I shouldn't take that. So again, it's big ego, the identity. So then I realized that I become discontent. So when you're not content, you're not happy, your mind, you have the craving, you keep wanting something else, isn't it? If you be able to attain that the stage that the mind become really still, your mind have to be happy. If you're not happy, you're still looking for something else. So when you're still looking for something else, you know, you feel that the one thing is there, the desires is there. So how come your mind becomes still? Your mind cannot become still. That's why it's always only the happy mind can be still. So then up, so now we go to this is paragraph 12. So he said that if a bhikkhu of such virtue, such state of stillness and such wisdom, its arms for consisting choice, hills, rice along with various sauces, curries, even that will not be, we will be no obstacles for him. Just as a cloth that is defiled and stained becomes pure and bright with the help of clear water, or just as gold becomes pure and bright with the help of furnace, so too, if a bhikkhu of such virtue eat alms food, there will be no obstacle for him. So it's okay. We don't have to feel guilty. If there's delicious food, just enjoy it as delicious food. So we don't have to feel guilty that, oh, I'm not pure, I shouldn't take delicious food. So it's okay. So he abides, pervading one quarter with the mind imbued with loving kindness, likewise the second, likewise the third, likewise the fourth, so above, below, around, and everywhere to all as to himself. He abides, pervading the all encompassing world with mind imbued with loving kindness, abundant, exalted, immeasurable, without hostility and without ill will. That is the four Brahma Vihara, loving kindness. Equanimity. So he abides, pervading one quarter with mind imbued with compassion, with a mind imbued with appreciative joy, with a mind imbued with equanimity, likewise the second, likewise the third, likewise the fourth. So above, below, around, and everywhere, and to all as to himself, he abides, pervading all encompassing world with mind imbued with equanimity, abundant, exalted, immeasurable, with a hostility and with that ill will. So he understands that this is so, and this is the when the Buddha's mentioned about abundant, exalted, immeasurable with the hostility, actually this is in the jhana state. So that's why, as you can see, practicing metta actually can also bring you to jhana state. And the equanimity and the four Brahma Vihara that also can bring you to jhana stage. So he understands, and then paragraph 17, he understands this. There is the inferior, there is the superior, and beyond there is an escape from this whole field of perception. When he said there is the inferior, there is the superior, so there is the inferior realm, the lower realm, higher realm, the whole realm of existence. So, and beyond, there is an escape. It's beyond the whole realm of existence, there is an escape from the whole field of perception. So when we are still in the realm of existence, so everything is just perception. So there is we escape from this whole field of perception, then we are no longer in that samsara. The whole realm of existence, so that is escape. So it will be fully enlightened, no longer in the chain. keep coming back, you know, like in the samsara, you know, we either go from higher realm, go back to lower realm, and then from lower realm, go up. So, like the Buddha's, it's very nice, simile the Buddha gave, and how Buddha describes the samsara. He said the samsara is just like you threw a bucket into the well, and you hit the side, it go round, and then it's ups and down. So it's just like you threw the bucket into the well, ups and down, go round and round. And this is how like the samsara. So it's very, very nice how he describes samsara. It's true, isn't it? So we go up and down from lower realm to higher realm, to higher realm, lower realm, and then we keep coming back, you know, in the circle. So round and round, up and down and round and round. So when he knows and sees that his mind is liberated from the taint of sensual desires, that is the taint of being and the taint of ignorance, that is the three asavas, that is the sensual desires and the sensual of being. Being is that wanting to be and wanting not to be. So we want to be someone, and not wanting to be is also want to be, to become someone, not to become someone. It still want to be. And also from the taint of delusion, that ignorance. So when it is liberated, it comes to knowledge. It is liberated. He understands birth is destroyed. The holy life has been lived and had to be done. What had to be done has been done. There is no more coming to any state of being. Bhikkhus. This bhikkhu is called one who bathes with the inner bathing. So that's why the Buddha said that it's because he's followed by, because he asked that to purify them, they're going to bathe in the river. So that's why the Buddha said this is the purify. Actually, this is how you purify inside. So this is the inner bathing. This is the inner purification. So now on that occasion, the Brahmin Sundarika Bharavaja was sitting not far from the Blessed One. Then he said to the Blessed One, but does Master Gautama go to Bahuka River to bathe? Why Brahmin go to the Bahuka River? Why can the Bahuka river do? What can the river do? So the Buddha asked, because they asked the Buddha, do you go to the river to bathe? You know, the Buddha said, what do the river will do to you? You know, what can the Bahuka river do? So Master Gautama, the Bahuka river is held by many to give liberation. It is held by many to give merits, and many wash away the evil actions in the Bahuka river. So that's why it's a superstitious, isn't it? That belief in this is wrong view. You believe that, you know, you jump into the river, you clean, and all your defilements gone, all your bad karmas go, and then it's so easy that we don't have to practice anymore, isn't it? So then the Blessed One addressed the Brahmins, Sundarika Bharadwaja stanzas. Bahuka and Atikaka, Kaya and Sundarika too, Bayaka and Sarasati, and the stream Bahumati, a fool may there forever bathe, yet will not purify that. So you can go there and bathe until your whole body wrinkles. You still will not get enlightened. The Buddha said, you will not purify all your dark deeds. So what can the Sundarika bring to pass? What the Payaka? What the Bahuka? They cannot purify an evildoer, a man who has done cruel and brutal deeds. So one pure in heart has every more. The feast of spring, the holy day, one fair in action, one pure in heart, bring his virtue to perfection. It's come from a pure heart, the Buddha say, that come to perfection. So it is there, Brahmin, that you should bathe to make yourself. So it's where you should bathe, the Buddha tell the Brahmin, to make yourself refuge for all beings. And if you speak no falsehood, nor work harm for living beings, so you don't use the wrong speech and not harming living beings, nor take what is offered not, be safe and free from avarice. What need for you to go to Gaya? For any well will be your Gaia. So that means that it's not that going there that, you know, you purify all your unwholesome evil deeds, you know. It's not like, just for example, if people have the wrong perception, it's nice you go to the temple, it's nice that you go to monastery to offer dana. But if you think that I go to the monastery to offer dana, that means all my evil deeds gone, you know. It's not. Actually, it's come from your own purification, that it's come from your restraint, keeping the precepts. So, not harming living beings, not take what is not given, wrong speech, and you, this is restraining our body, our mind, our speech. This is where we should, this, we take this as our refuge. This is where we need to go to bathe. It's not going to the river, it's not going to the temple or, you know, whatever people, religion, you know. It's nice, it's okay that you go there. But if you think that that will make you pure, then it's wrong view. You don't have right view. That's the wrong understanding. So when this was said, the Brahmin Sundarika Bharadwaja said, "Magnificent Master Gautama, Magnificent Master Gautama, Master Gautama has made the Dharma clear in many ways, as though he were turning upright what had been overthrown, revealing what has hidden, showing the way to one who has lost, or holding up a lamp in the dark for those with eyesight to see forms. I go to the Master Gautama for refuge, and to the Dharma, and to the Sangha of bhikkhus. I will receive the going forth under Master Gautama. I will receive the full admission." And the Brahmin Sundarika Bharadwaja received the going forth under the Blessed One, and he received the full admission. And soon, no long after his full admission, dwelling alone, withdrawn, diligent, ardent, and resolute, the venerable Bharadwaja, by realizing for himself with direct knowledge, here and now enter a point and abide in that supreme goal of holy life, for the sake of which cleansements rightly go forth from the home to home life into homelessness. He directly knew birth is destroyed, the holy life has been lived, and had to be what had to be done has been done. There is no more coming to any state of being, and the venerable Bharadwaja became one of the arahants. So that's said that when after he become fully ordained, he become a monk as a fully ordained bhikkhu, then no long time, then he's got enlightened. So when they said no long time, doesn't mean that, you know, no long time, then after the ordained 1 week, 2 weeks, or another day, they're enlightened. Actually, no long time sometimes can be 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, that is no long time. So don't feel hopeless, you know, you still got hope. Okay, when they said, sometimes people ask me, why is it so easy? And then listen to one sutta, they got enlightened. No, when sometimes they said no long time, it's really no long time, isn't it? If you compare to how long we've been in the samsara, you know, how many eons lifetime we've been in the samsara. So 50 years is nothing, isn't it? It's no long time for 50, compared to the whole, you know, the whole realm of existence that we're in the samsara, you know, keep coming back. And how long we've been, you know, go again, you know, and get stuck in the samsara for how many lifetimes in there. So no long time doesn't mean that immediately or after a week, just a few days, no. Actually, when they said no long time, yeah, it's like Anuruddha, he's also like, he's been a monk for so many years, like, you know, that's the eighth thought of the great man. So then he's been contemplating the seven thoughts, and then someone asked why the Buddha don't give him the teaching of the eighth one, because he listened to the eighth teaching, the eighth thought, the Buddha's the last teaching, and he got enlightened. So he said he'd been a monk for so many years, why the Buddha didn't teach him? Because sometimes it's not ready. So your mind is not receptive. So even you listen also, you won't get it. So that's why the mind is not receptive. So that's why the mind is not purified enough to really take in, to be receptive. So that's why the mind is not ready yet. So any questions or comments? about this. So basically, this teaching is about that the whole purification. This is about the whole path of purification. So until when the mind is we have the purity, then you can easily have fixed delights in the Dharma. So if you don't have purity, it's difficult. You even listen to the Dharma, you can't really, you're not receptive. I remember there was a lady, and he came to me. He said, can you give me some Dharma books? I want to give it to my son because her son committed suicide and he want him to read Dharma books. I said, this is not the time to ask him to read Dharma books because there's someone that is, someone that is that kind of state of mind that confused. I said, this is not how you try to give him all the Dharma books and ask him to read. I think the more he read, the more confused he feel, Like sometimes that people ask me, like yesterday there was a question that, where the Red Sutras, the Buddha said, you have to go forth, you have to go homeless, you go to from home to homelessness, And I see that people have the misunderstanding of practice Buddhism, you have to become monks, you have to become nuns, it's really scared people off. So it's when your mind is ready, only, they have the clarity. When your mind ready, you prepare, then you can take delights, then you will get inspired by the teaching. So if your mind is not receptive, it's difficult to have the inspiration to take delights in the teaching, isn't that you don't get the inspiration at all until when your mind have the purity. So the purity is come from the practice, come from restraining our mind, keeping precepts, develop practice meditation, present moment awareness. And this is how through that we got liberated. It's not through doing all performs of the rites of ritual or with the food that we eat, being vegetarian or non-vegetarian, or like that people believe that they do some rites and rituals or whether like those Brahmin believe that they go to, they jump into the Ganges River and then they bathe them, then they be purified. So it's not through all this, it's through our practice. That is a Noble Eightfold Path. That's it, practice, that's Sila, Samadhi, Panya. So this is the way to go. So any questions or comments? Yes. I think, can you, that does, might.
Wondering a bit more about purification. Are there sort of things,
okay,
other daily things you'd suggest in terms of purifying the mind?
Okay. So actually, this is this path of purification. You have to do it from a coarser to more refined level. So we have to start with where we at. So, like the this is the teaching of all the Buddhas. So first of all, you have to be able to restrain ourselves, refrain from doing something unwholesome. That's why keeping precept is one of the way to restrain ourselves to doing something unskillful. Then we actively cultivate good, doing something good. So this is how we start to take a new channel, not to follow the old pattern. So we have a new habit, always, that develop, that we brainwash ourselves to develop those qualities. So we think of, rather than being someone of fault-finding mind, we always see something good in someone. And this is how, it's a gradual training. So, like, being of service, giving. If we can't let go of, like, our material things, can we let go of more subtle things, isn't it? So we start even offering, practice generosity. You also have to start from a coarser level to more refined level. First of all, you be able to, at least I can give something. Then later, you can give something that you would like, you would love to have it, keep it for yourself, but you give it away. Then you're letting go more. So it's a gradual training. So you have to practice. Keep practicing, from a more coarser level to more refined level. So this is the teaching of all the Buddhas. He said, at first you have to restrain yourself from unwholesome action, our speech, our mind. We frame ourselves from unwholesome, anything that is unskillful. Then we actively cultivate good, develop those good qualities. that this is how then we purify our mind, and this is through this only we can purify our mind. We cannot use willpower, you know, just think, I think I'm good, I'm pure. It's not like this. You have to do the practice. You know, this answer your question? Okay. So, any more questions or comments? Any more questions or comments? No comments, no questions? All satisfied? No? All satisfied, happy? Okay. Oh, thank you. Thank you for attending this class.